You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, another UFC event coming up in Las Vegas. A ton of pre-fight drama as expected in this crazy world we live in right now. But tomorrow night at the UFC Apex, let there be fights, ladies and gentlemen. We welcome you to the UFC Vegas 9 preview show for MMAfighting.com. I am Mike Heck. That is Jose Youngs. Jose, let's talk drama here. I mean, we had some moving and shaking over the last 24 hours or so. First off, Sajara Eubanks was scheduled to fight Carol Rosa tomorrow night. Rosa had issues with her weight cut. She was hospitalized. Obviously, we wish her all the best, but Eubanks is now off the card altogether, and now she's going to face Julia Avila next weekend. So that was one thing. And then there was a bit of a scare with Brian Kelleher last night because he goes on Twitter and says that the phone rang. He's got a new opponent, which looked to have been Ray Rodriguez, who weighed in as a backup earlier today. I confirmed last night that Natividad got retested after a false positive. He's good to go for tomorrow night, at least as of right now. So I guess my first question is this something that should no longer be a surprise to us? Like, is this, I guess, more the rule than the exception moving forward in 2020 UFC?
Yeah, I'd be more surprised if nothing happened. I mean, it seems like nothing is safe until they're actually in the octagon. Like, what was it? The last 2 weeks, we've lost fights the day of the fights. Like, wasn't Gerald Meerschaert, Ed Herman, like, that was scrapped. They weighed in. They stared down. And then, like, the next day, Saturday morning, it was scrapped. Like, and then what, OSP, Alonzo Menifield, the first time they weighed in and stared down. And then that fight was scrapped the day of the fight and was pushed to today. So nothing is safe until the fighters even enter the octagon. Because even remember, what was it? Trevin Giles was getting ready to walk, and then the fight fell out. He was literally had his hands taped up. He was ready to go. He was ready to make the walk. And then like 30 seconds before the fight, he passes out. So nothing is safe in 2020 until the fighters are inside the octagon. And then all they have to worry about is getting punched, eye poked, low blowed, submitted, whatever. But until then, no fight is official.
Well, one fight that at least is official right now with weigh-ins and all that stuff is the main event tomorrow night. We have Alistair Overeem, the wily veteran of, I don't know, 17,000 or so professional combat sports fights. The man is a legend for sure. And after an impressive win over Walt Harris, he's going to headline tomorrow night's event against Augusto Sakai, a man who has won six in a row. I have to be honest, Jose, when this fight was announced, I don't know if I had like an actual reaction to it. It was like equal parts surprised and intrigued at the same time. Obviously a huge opportunity for Sakai, pretty risky fight for Overeem in my opinion. What say you?
Yeah, but that seems to be Overeem's MO, especially lately, where he's so willing to fight anyone because even when he loses, he just wants to get back in there and compete and make it closer to the title picture. And he's in that mindset where I'm not just going to start calling people out because then that won't get me closer. I'm going to keep fighting until they can't deny me a title shot. So we saw that when he won. Who was it? When he fought Sergey over in Beijing at like 4 a.m. off back to back loss. He took on a young upstart in Francis Ngannou and takes on a young Curtis Blaydes. He will fight anyone regardless of ranking, record, experience inside the octagon. Like, that's why I said when he fought Walt Harris in Jacksonville, he was the perfect opponent for Walt Harris, because he, A, was going to take the fight seriously, B, was paid all the respects to Walt. Overeem's never wanted to talk trash or bring up needed drama or anything like that. And he's someone that has pretty much experienced almost anything, that if you throw Overeem there, you're working with a professional. So when they announced this fight, I was with you. I didn't really have a reaction, but it's I'm not surprised Overeem took this fight, because especially in recent times, that's been his MO.
Yeah, I mean, when I say risky, it's more of like a stock department risky, because clearly the advantage goes to Augusto Sakai in that department if he wins. Overeem has won 3 out of his last 4, and you know, the Walt Harris fight sticks out a lot, but he believes he's got another run to the title left in him at this point in his career, and who's to say that's not true? But I'm like, what does a win over Augusto Sakai do for Alistair Overeem?
It keeps him moving forward, especially in this heavyweight division that is now super interesting. Now that Daniel Cormier and Stipe Miocic are no longer keeping that division hostage with that trilogy, the division can move forward. And Dana White has said, Francis is not getting skipped over. Francis is next. Now with the addition of John Jones, and especially since Curtis Blaydes has already lost twice to Francis Ngannou, he might not get a shot against him, especially if Francis beats Stipe. I think Overeem just needs to keep working and working and working and knocking off these guys. And this could be kind of a placeholder fight, but if he doesn't fight, that means people pass him. That means people will move on from him. This is my division and my spot, and I'm going to maintain it and keep fighting and keep my name moving forward in this division that's now open, that's now wide open.
What about Sakai? He says that if he beats a legend, he gets on the road to becoming a legend in his own right, and he should be a top 5 guy with the win over a guy like Alistair Overeem. Do you agree with that sentiment, or is he, you know, just shooting a little too high here?
I don't know if he's top 5, but he'd clearly be like top 10, top 7 if he's not already. I don't know his ranking off the top of my head, but what would that be, like 5, 6 in a row at heavyweight? He's super young in the division, so the UFC heavyweight division needs fighters like Augusto Sakai, who, yeah, I don't want to say he's biting off more than he can chew, but like, you need that mindset going forward. Like, if I beat Alistair Overeem, if I knock, like, look at the last few people who have beaten Alistair Overeem, like Jairzinho Rozenstruik, Francis Ngannou, Curtis Blaydes. Like, these are the best of the best at heavyweight. These are all top 5 exciting heavyweights. If he goes out there and puts on a performance like that against Alistair Overeem, you have to start mentioning him with those names. I don't think he'll do that, because I don't think he's that type of fighter, especially compared to Ngannou and Rozenstruik and Curtis Blaydes, who are all hyper explosive, athletic. And Augusto Sakai is more of a I don't know how to describe it. He's coming off a couple split decision wins. You don't see Francis Ngannou and Rozenstruik and Curtis Blaydes pulling off split decisions. They're all pretty dominant, but a win is a win in the UFC, especially in the heavyweight division moving forward. So it would be massive for his career, putting his name under in the column of wins over Alistair Overeem.
Do you have an official pick here? Does Sakai take that extra step here?
No, I don't think so. I actually think Augusto Sakai is a lot better than people think. I think those two split decisions are splits. And I know I like to joke, a split decision win in the UFC heavyweight division should just be an L, because no heavyweight should go to a decision. That's all tongue-in-cheek, good fun, because a win is a win, and you get the rest of your paycheck for that. But I don't think he gets it done, especially in 5 rounds. Overeem, this new Overeem has looked very impressive, especially like we saw the Walt Harris fight. Like, if they stopped that Walt Harris fight when Walt Harris was just throwing bombs on him, I don't think any of us would complain about that stoppage at all. Like, he was just putting it on him. And then Overeem hit the switch, literally hit the switch. You saw what training with Curtis Blaydes has done for his wrestling. Like, he switched, reversed, and then just unloaded with his own attack. So this new Overeem that's added some new wrinkles to his game, especially training with Curtis Blaydes, is a very dangerous individual. And let's not forget, he was 4 seconds away for beating Jairzinho Rozenstruik, who was a late notice replacement for Walt Harris on that DC card before his lip got torn open with 4 seconds to go. So he could very well be on a 4-fight win streak. He's not. A win is a win. Jairzinho Rozenstruik is a bad dude in his own mind, but I think Alistair gets this done inside 3.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I feel, especially with the last 2 fights, this is probably, I'm not going to say like the easiest road to a fight, but compared to December and his last fight with Walt Harris, especially the last fight with everything going on in Walt's life, all the questions being asked, and you know, his first fight in the COVID era, there's a lot going on there. Now he's, you know, got the same opponent the entire time. He gets to kind of roll on into a fight that he's been preparing for a while. So I like Overeem in this fight too. How he does it, I have no idea, because it's the heavyweight division, and it's 2020, so this could be a five-round decision for all we know, but I'm favoring Overeem here. Co-main event, we have Ovin St. Preux taking on Alonzo Menafield, and I feel like we just talked about this fight. That's because we did 2 weeks ago. OSP tests positive for COVID. He's pulled from the card right before the event began, as you alluded to. Now we're rebooked for tomorrow night. So I guess like the only question I have here, since we broke this fight down at least once at this point, does this extra time give an advantage to either fighter at all, or is this the same scenario we were in a couple of weeks ago?
That's a good question. I don't honestly know. It always be coming off a bout with COVID-19. So there's been a couple of Major League Baseball players who have caught, and they said it's taken them a while to physically feel the same. Like, I can't remember his name, but he's like, it's hard for me to even just like muster energy or strength at times in the day, just because my body is still going through it. And I've never had it. I don't know the exact right, like the fallout from it, but if a fighter is feeling that and you're about to go fist fight a human being like Alonzo Menafield, good luck to you, man, because that's going to be a rough, rough day. But Alonzo Menafield is still young. He only has like, 10, 11 fights total. I'm sure the added time did benefits for him, but it's back-to-back weight cuts for these two guys, and they're not the smallest light heavyweights in the world. Like, OSP most recently fought a heavyweight. I think he was like 240, something like that, which is heavier than the heavyweight champion, and Stipe Miocic at times. So it's like an extra 35 pounds. So I don't know. I don't know what the benefits are from an extra, 1 to 2 weeks. I honestly don't know how OSP is feeling physically, and I've not ever really had an interaction with Alonzo Menafield outside of interviewing him. So that's a good question. I hadn't thought of it.
Yeah. Check out my interview with OSP. It was interesting. He said he actually feels better than he did 2 weeks ago. He said he came in lighter into fight week than he did 2 weeks ago. So I guess like from what he was telling me, he got COVID in like the middle or end of July. And for some reason it kept coming up on the test. So he was as surprised as anybody else because he had different fluctuations of like, it was negative, positive, negative, positive. Weird. So pretty weird situation, but he looks ready to go. Menafield's ready to go. So finally this fight's going to go down in the co-main event tomorrow night. But I think the fight circled on a lot of people's cards heading into today. And now on everybody's cards after their face-off is the welterweight matchup between Michel Pereira, his first fight since Diego Sanchez matchup in February, where he was disqualified after completely dominating every single second of that fight. And it's also the last fight of his current deal. He's going to take on Zalim Amadeyev, who looks to get back on track, just like Pereira. Both guys come in on a 2-fight losing streak. This fight just screams craziness and all the things we're looking for as fight fans. But what comes to mind when you think of this fight? Because it's just glorious to me.
I think there's going to be a lot of yelling back and forth during this fight. Michel Pereira and Zalim, they got into it on the stage. Like, Michel Pereira, I don't think he's like an angry, agitated individual. He just gets very hyped to fight. He's excited to fight. So when he squared off with Zalim, he got really close and kind of pushed his face up against him. Zalim pushed him and they were yelling back and forth. They both made the throat slash motion. I don't think they hate each other. I think it's just they're very hyped and they're excited to fight. Now, Michel Pereira is a video game character come to life. Whether he got his cardio situation figured out is a whole nother story. He made weight. Obviously, he didn't make weight a few fights ago, and that played that was very detrimental to his cardio. Now, I don't know what's going to happen. I know Zalim has that KO loss to Danny Roberts, if I'm not mistaken. That was one of his last two fights. Now, Michel Pereira had one of the best knockouts I've ever seen against Danny Roberts. So just based on MMA math alone, which is, of course, the most ridiculous argument in the world that would favor Michel Pereira, I would still favor him. I think he was beating Diego Sanchez before that DQ. Like, I think we can all agree that Michel Pereira would have won that fight if it reached the judge's decision. I just think he's an uber exciting fighter, a very, very talented, very exciting to watch. I don't know if he'll ever be champion, but he's a guy that everyone is like, we're talking about him. He's on a 2-fight losing streak. His opponent is on a 2-fight losing streak. This is not the best fight card we've seen. And we are still talking about Michel Pereira. And that just shows you how captivating he is inside the octagon with his backflips and his runs off the cage. Like, I showed my girlfriend some of his highlights. She's like, this isn't real. That's not a real fighter. So it's hard not to pay attention to this individual. So I favor him to win. And if this is his last fight, I expect the UFC is really going to want him back because people are talking about him for sure. As Alex Kaley would say, it gets him off the couch.
I'm pretty sure, and I might be wrong about this. You guys can go back into the archives and check it out. But I think Pejeda had the longest virtual media day scrum of anybody on the card. Like, definitely longer than Sakai. Overy might be the only one who didn't, but I'm not 100% sure. But Pejeda, I mean, any guy who says, I spent my training camp taking cows down and running with horses on a farm. I mean, this guy is just something else. So that's going to be a good fight to watch tomorrow night. Main cards, you know, pretty decent. We got Crystal Crew member Brian Kelleher taking on newcomer Kevin Natividad. That's going to be a great fight. We got the light. As of right now, it is 3:30 Eastern time as we say this. So as of now, that is the case. Along with, we got Jalen Turner, who's just the biggest 55er I've ever seen in terms of height, taking on Thiago Moises. And then, Jose, you know where I'm going with this. There's some fights on this card that are interesting that aren't getting enough love here. So let us change that. Let us give it some love. What is that under the radar fight that you have circled on the card tomorrow night?
Well, I know the one that was quote won in between the links, for whatever that means. I mean, the fans all agree that I won. They all disagree with you. Alexander Romanov and Marcos Rogério de Lima's got to be a fun one. It's a heavyweight scrap. I can't imagine that fight goes to the three rounds. That has zero title implications right now. But if you're just looking for like a banger of a fight, I'd probably circle down for some sort of weird stoppage. And then if we're looking at fights that are actually important to the division, women's flyweight is not the deepest division in the UFC. So anytime you can string together a couple wins or get some impressive performances, it kind of, you're not going to get a title shot right away, but it moves you a lot closer than most divisions would if you're on a 1-2 fight win streak. So Viviana Rujo versus Montana De La Rosa, you kind of have to circle for importance in the division. Viviana Rujo, I was at her fight in Edmonton when I think she beat Alexis Davis. And that was kind of her coming out party. She had that great speech at the end where she's like, any woman going through like domestic abuse and this and that, come to my gym and I will train you on self-defense. So she kind of won over a lot of fans there. And then she fought Jessica Ai. Jessica Ai missed weight, if I'm not mistaken. And Viviana Rujo didn't win. I think if she had won, she'd be very, very close to a title shot, if not already had one at that point. Then Montana De La Rosa obviously has that good story where her husband is also fighting in the UFC. And I believe her only loss recently is to like Andrea Lee, Cynthia Calvillo, those type of fighters. So and I even think Cynthia was on the regional circuit, if I'm not mistaken. It wasn't even in the UFC. So she's losing to the best of the best and she's beating everyone else. So I think you really have to circle that fight for not. Might not. I don't think it's going to have a stoppage, but it's the one. I think it's the only fight in the prelims that will have some sort of implication moving forward in the rankings.
Yeah, I'm Rogério de Lima versus Romanov is just crazy. Like the more I've dove into that fight, the more excited I am, and it's going to be interesting. But in terms of matchups, like I agree with you, Araújo versus De La Rosa is fun, but I have a feeling, and I seem to do this every time we pick these under the radar fights, but I'm going to. The first fight of the night, Cole Smith versus Hunter Azure sticks out to me at 135 because both guys are coming off their first pro losses. Smith was interesting because a lot of people thought he beat Miles Johns in Vancouver. I thought it was really, really close. Could have gone either way, but a lot of people thought Cole Smith won that fight. And then Azure looked the best he's ever looked in his entire career until Brian Kelleher knocked him out in the second round in Jacksonville.
He was winning until he wasn't. And I think Dana White even brought it up. When we interviewed him at the scrum, because I was there in Jacksonville, when during the fight, the live betting odds, like Brian Kelleher all of a sudden became like a plus 200, plus 300 at one point, because Azure looked so good that Kelleher became like a plus 300 underdog, like during the fight until he knocked him dead. So Hunter Azure, like that's a fun fight. It's a phenomenal fight, and it's a fight that I would assume Mike Heck would pick as an under the radar fight.
That's my kind of fight, but that'll be a good one at 135. But who knows what's going to happen tomorrow night, if this card will remain intact tomorrow night. I'm trying to stay positive here, but I'm just preparing for what could be. But
it's weird, man, because didn't we just have media day and we spoke to Sajara Eubanks and we spoke to Brian Keller, and then like 20 minutes later it's like, no, they didn't. One of them might not have a fight and the other one is moving to another week. So I'm not even. This preview show might be obsolete in 24 hours.
Now, Timmy Down, we had a media day scrum too. It's crazy, but we'll just stay positive here. I mean, things could happen tonight, tomorrow night, later on this afternoon, but either way, keep it locked to MMAfighting.com because we'll keep you updated on any changes or all the results that happen for UFC Vegas 9 tomorrow night. As we wrap up another preview show for Jose Youngs, I am Mike Heck. We'll see you tomorrow night, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Fundrise. Buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes, and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/fox. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.